Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Svadhunya Udhardhrai Sva Jata Kalape Upasprishantas Charanoparanam Padam Yad Archanti Ahi Raja Kanya Sa Prema Nana Balibhir Varartai Swadhunyudharai Swajata Kalapir Upasprishantas Charanopadanam Padmam Yararchant Yahi Raja Kanya Rajas Sapremana Nabalibhir Varartaha Swadhunyudharai Swajata Kalapir Upasprishantas Charanoparanam Padmam Yararchant Yahi Raja Kanyas Sapremana Nabalibhir Varartaha Swadhunyadharai Swajata Kalapir Upasprishantas Charanopadanam Padmam Yararchant Yahi Raja Kanyas Sapremana Nabalibhir Vararta Swadhuni Udha, by the water of the Ganges. Ardraihi, being moistened. Svajata, bunch of hairs. Kalapaihi, situated on the head. Upasprishanta, by so touching. Charana Upadhanam, the shelter of his feet. Padmam, the lotus shelter. Yat, that which. Archanti, worships. Ahiraja, the serpent king. Kanya, daughters. Saprema, with great devotion. Nana, various. Balibhi, paraphernalia. Vada Artaha, being desirous of husbands. Translation, text 3. Some time ago, being inquisitive to know, Sanat Kumar, the chief of the boy saints, accompanied by other great sages, inquired exactly like you about the truths regarding Vasudeva, the Supreme, from Lord Shankarshan, who is seated at the bottom of the universe. Purport. This is in clarification of the statement that the Lord spoke directly on the Srimad Bhagavatam. When and unto whom the Bhagavatam was spoken is explained herewith. Questions similar to those put forward by Vidura were asked by great sages like Sanat Kumar. And Lord Sankarsana, the plenary expansion of the Supreme Lord Vasudeva, answered them. Text 4. At that time, Lord Sankarsan was meditating upon his Supreme Lord, whom the learned esteem as Lord Vasudeva. But for the sake of the advancement of the great learned sages, he slightly opened his lotus-like eyes and began to speak. Text 5. The sages came from the highest planets down to the lower region, through the water of the Ganges, and therefore the hair on their heads was wet. They touched the lotus feet of the Lord, which are worshipped with various paraphernalia, by the daughters of the Serpent King, when they desire good husbands. Purport. The Ganges water flows directly from the lotus feet of Vishnu, and its course runs from the highest planet of the universe down to the lowest. The sages came down from Satyaloka by taking advantage of the flowing water, a process of transportation made possible by the power of mystic yoga. The river flows thousands and thousands of miles. A perfect yogi can at once transfer himself from one place to another simply by dipping in its water. The Ganges is the only celestial river which flows throughout the universe, and great sages travel all over the universe via this sacred river. The statement that their hair was wet indicates that it was directly moistened by the water originating from the lotus feet of Vishnu, the Ganges. Whoever touches the water of the Ganges to his head surely touches the lotus feet of the Lord directly and can become free from all effects of sinful activities. If, after taking a bath in the Ganges or being washed of all sin, a man guards himself against committing further sinful acts, then certainly he is delivered. But if he again takes up sinful activities, his bath in the Ganges is as good as that of the elephant, who nicely takes his bath in a river, but later spoils the whole thing by covering himself with dust on the land. So here we see is that a conversation is being quoted from previously. The Bhagavatam does that a lot. And a lot of conversations we see come from Sanat Kumar. Sanat Kumar is the head of the four Kumaras, like that. He's technically, he's also Prajumna. So then, here it's very natural then, Sankarsan is, it's being quoted, because the questions that Prajumna ask are very relevant. And now Sankarsan will answer them, because he's the source of Prajumna. So then, and then here the answers are Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is what the Lord spoke originally. Right? So the original Bhagavatam then is the Chaturshloki. In that it's explaining very clearly about how the devotee should be seeing Krishna in everything. Right? So now, this then has various stages, in that one sees the Lord in everything by understanding how his potencies, his energies have entered everything. Then we see higher than that is, when that is practiced, then he sees the personality behind those energies. Right? Then ultimately he sees the Lord in his pastimes through being inspired by what he sees. Does that make some sense, the difference? Right? In other words, the potency that makes anything work in this world, that's coming from Krishna. Right? But it's the potency. Then from the potency, then you go back to Krishna. Right? That the Lord has, that means the potency is there, that potency is coming from the person who is organizing all this, and then from there it goes back to Bhagavan. Right? Next stage is then when seeing the effect of the potencies, one thinks of the person who's making that arrangement of those potencies. Then next stage is from seeing the potencies, you think of the origin of those potencies, meaning the pastimes of the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Like the gopis, they would see the aspects of the creation and think of Krishna and his pastimes. Right? The yogis will see the potency and will think of the person whose potency that is coming from. Right? Then the impersonalists, on their first steps in self-realization to becoming personalists, then they see the potency and know that that's the Lord's potency. Right? And then from there, slowly, slowly they move forward. Right? So this is what's being established by this, the original Bhagavatam. And from that, we see is that all aspects of our philosophy and culture can expand. Everything can come out of these aspects. So here is then a nice conversation. We know it's a good question because the same question was asked by Sanat Kumar. Right? He wants to know about the Supreme Lord. So the Kumaras wanted to know about Vasudev, and here Vidura wants to know about Vasudev. So it works very well. And so then they're quoting from the conversation where they ask Sankarshan, right? So being their source, naturally, that's where they're going to ask, right? So then Sankarshan, we see here is why he would be the authority to speak, because he's expanding from Vasudev. And he's meditating on Vasudev. But for the, the blessings of the Kumaras and the sages, then he stops his meditation on Vasudev, apparently, and then opens his eyes ever so slightly, and then begins to speak on Vasudev. Right? So then here is that these sages, then they have come to also hear this conversation. They, you know, you hear that something's happening in the universe, the word gets around fast, and people come. Right, so they come in the quickest way possible. As we see Lord Shiva, when he heard that there was going to be, you know, discussions here in Navadvip, then he came by Lord Brahma's swan, because he figured that Nandi would be a little slow, right? You know, swans, they fly, it's a little faster than bulls. So, like this. So, the sages, the yogis, they can come through the Ganga, like that. They dip in one place, they come out another. Prabhupada mentions that the big yogis in the Himalayas, it says they don't walk down here. The ones that are walk are the small ones. The big ones, then they dip in the Ganga up in the Himalayas and then come out at the Kumbh Mela, right? Then they spend some time or some of them just come down, come up, take their bath, and then go back. Some come and spend some time like that. Once Prabhupada was walking, I think it was 77 Kumbh Mela. They were walking and they saw with the devotees around, you know, seeing all the different, sights, you know, means all the different kinds of sadhus and babas and yogis and all that. So then there was one group of very young babas and they looked like, you know, quite young, you know, like they'd be, yeah, very youthful. But now you, if one ever notices the very kind of like mature, standard or senior yogis, they have a lot of hair on their head. So amongst that group, the ones that keep the jata, it's considered that when you have 12 years of hair on your head, then you've been practicing for some time, right? Because 12 years is a yuga in the shorter astrological consideration. So then that's a revolution of what? Jupiter, no? So it's considered a very, important amount of time, right? Knowledge is practiced. The brahmachari takes a vow for 12 years. Any serious prayaschitta is for 12 years. So 12 is considered a good number. So, you know, and these yogis, you could see, were very well, established in their yogic position. But they looked like kids. So as they walked by, then the devotees mentioned about these yogis, you know, they look so young. Prabhupada says, no, they're not young, they're some hundreds of years old, like that. Because he said the yogis, then they go into trance, they stop the breathing. And your lifespan is as long as how many breaths you have. So if you stop the breathing, then you live longer. Of course, if you're doing nothing, but, like that. Makes some people happy. So, like that. So, these are people that come down through the Ganga. So, it was still going on. We even saw it Prabhupada's time. So, It's not something so distant. So then it mentions here that by touching the Ganges, then you're directly in contact with the Lord. The water of the Ganges comes from the Lord's lotus feet. So then this then is, how do you say? The purifying element. The sages are coming. So anyone who takes bath in the Ganga is freed from sin, right? Washed of all sins. Then if one is very careful to avoid any other improper activity, then that position will stay. That's the difference being made between hearing the Bhagavatam and bathing the Ganges. That bathing the Ganges will free one from all sin, but it doesn't get rid of the desire for sin. That's why it says one has to be very careful. While the Bhagavatam, by hearing Bhagavatam or hearing chanting the holy name, that will uproot the desire to perform sin. That's why it's said it's more powerful hearing Bhagavatam than once hearing Bhagavatam is more powerful than many, many baths in the Ganga. Right? So taking bath in the Ganga is very important, but it's not that the hearing of the Bhagavatam then is what is very special. So both of these things. So when the devotee endeavors that he's performing his activities, and in performing it, he's very careful to not do things that will create further contamination. Because otherwise one's purified, and then again these things come up, then it slows down one's progress. But if one is very careful, then progress is not slowed. Then it's one moves forward. Okay. You also have the elements of, how do you say? Today is the Dasami, so it's the day Ram Vijay, also the appearance of Madhvacharya. So Madhvacharya is Hanuman. Like that, in this relation. Means he appears in all these different things. He's Vayu in the Satya Yuga, Hanuman in the Treta Yuga, Bhima in the Dwapara, and Madhvacharya in the Kali Yuga. So, great personality. Vayu is considered a guru in the demigods. Because it is, air purifies, air gives life, air makes things work, so it's only by practice then one's knowledge becomes useful. Chanakya Pandit says knowledge that is not practiced is useless. It's a waste of time. So it must be practiced. So it's practiced through activity. And any activity we perform, it's through the movement of the life airs. So then, therefore then, Vayu is, you know, the important element that makes the practice of what we know happen. So Madhva is very fixed, very staunch. Took sannyas at 12. He wanted to take sannyas, but his father was not very impressed with the idea. Right? He was a nice boy, so naturally you like to keep nice boys at home. So then, but Madhvacharya kept harassing him to allow him to take sannyas. So one day, this harassment was going on. Father became angry and he had his dry stick, a walking stick. You know, so it's been dead for quite a while, right? And in anger, he jammed it into the ground. He says, okay, you can take sannyas when this sprouts. Right? So that, sure enough, next morning, there were lots of nice green leaves on it and everything. And so then, Madhvacharya took sannyas. So then, he established his philosophy of Dvaita, because the monists, then they're talking about the oneness of the living entity and God. So that's not really appreciated by the Vaishnava community. Meaning oneness, meaning there is no difference on any level. So then Ramanuja came after Shankara, and so he established that the Vishishta Dvait means specialized oneness. It's not just oneness like the Mayavadis talk. It's special in that the mood is the same. Right? Because if the mood is the same, you can have rasa. Mood's not the same, no rasa. Right? So this was important to establish the proper basis for a relationship between the Supreme Lord and the living entity. But Madhvacharya then was seeing that the Shankarites weren't going away, because here there'd be too much closeness between Shankara and Ramanuja. So then he took the position of making it very clear that there's two, right? Because in Vaishnava tradition we see before that with, how you say? I think with, it's a Nimbarka? Dwait Adwait? Yeah. So then, it's two, it's one. Means you can look at it both perspectives. The living entity and the Lord are different because there's energy energetic, and they're the same because they have the same mood, and the drop of the water is non-different from the ocean. Like this. But it's two different perspectives. But they both work. So he was taking that of two, while Ramanuja was taking more that of one. So then Madhva didn't appreciate this, and so then he just started making it very clear there's two. And then arguing very, very strongly like this. And then, you know, he was gaining success, he was moving forward, and then he wrote a commentary on the Vedanta, and he got the blessings of Vyasadeva himself. He walked up to the Himalayas to meet Vyasadeva Uttarabhadri. But, you know, it's not walking like we do, you know, step by step. This means one step on one mountaintop, the next step on the next mountaintop, like that. So this way then he walked to Uttarabhadri, spent time there, and getting the blessings of Vyasadeva. So that's why we see in the Parampara he's a direct disciple of Vyasadeva, because he actually went and met him. So then he came, established, finalized his, you know, his commentaries on that, and then preached very strongly, and this way then, you know, very strongly routed the Shankarites. And then, you know, as time went, his other disciples, I think it was Deshika, then he was also very strong in preaching. And then in our line, then we also come, Lord Chaitanya accepted the Madhva line because of the element of worship of Krishna, like that. All the others worship the form of Vishnu as their main deity, but Madhva, even though he's a worshipper of Vishnu, then worships the form of Krishna as their main deity. But still the element then would come because he is a worshipper of Ramachandra himself. So Ram then, he appeared, he's known as Dhirodatta, the four different personalities of Krishna, main categories. Dhirodatta is the element, aspect of Vasudev. So that's why it's also, you know, it comes in a nice thing they're going to discuss about Vasudev. In that he, but is very, how you say, fixed in the performance of religious duties. Right? This Maryada then is that the religious duties are performed, and that is the prominent element. Right? Everything's done proper, everything's done right, everything's according to Shastra. So the sentiment in that means anyone also bases it on Shastra, but the Shastra takes the main prominence rather than the force of the emotions. So then Ramachandra is given as the perfect example of this aspect of Krishna's personality. So he is very much fixed in the religious principles. He would do everything properly. We see then his wife also, his consort Sita Devi, she would do everything very properly. And that, and then by doing all these properly, then we also see is then there was a difficulty of, how you say, Sita Devi was extremely attractive. You know, most attractive. So it said anything done in excess gives trouble. So Chanakya mentions this point, that because Sita was so beautiful, it was in excess, so that's what got her into trouble. That's why she was kidnapped. Right? You know, Ravana got into trouble because of his arrogance. Just arrogance is too excessive, right? Otherwise, he could have surrendered, got everything back, but he was too proud, right? He already lost everything like that, but still he was too proud to accept that he could be defeated by a human being, right? So then this created problem for him. So the example is that anything that's to excess is a problem. So we see here is then Ramachandra then performed his duties. He went, he brought his wife, he went, defeated the king. It wasn't that Hanuman was very perfect in performing his duties. He was very loyal. Sita was lost. He went, found Sita. So Ramachandra was in such a mood of separation that he was waiting for Hanuman to come and see if she was found, because no one else could go to Lanka. He was the only one that could jump 100 yojanas. Everyone else could jump, you know, 10 yojanas, 50 yojanas, 60 yojanas. No one could jump 100, but only Hanuman could do that. So he went. So then when he came, when he had found Sita, you know, the normal thing would be, I found Sita, right? Or Sita found I, right? But the difficulty comes is when you say Sita, then you could get any reading, right? After you say Sita, you could say was not found, right? So therefore, he started the sentence with found. And so then from hearing found, then Ramachandra was, you know, relieved. Because if he heard Sita and he thought she wasn't found, then that would have been too much. So he said found. And then after saying that, then he said Sita. Yeah. So like that, then we see the mood of Hanuman, you know, how much he wants to please. So Madhucharya then is trying to do this, trying to please very nicely. So then going then, Sita also was the point was Hanuman could have brought her back, but the point is no, my husband's supposed to, he's a king, he's supposed to bring me. Right? You know, that's the way Kshatriyas have their own, you know, the depth of the, it's not passion as meaning sensual, passion meaning the emotional passion is very deep. So her point is my husband's a king, you know, he should bring me, right? Otherwise Hanuman said, I can take you back, right? One jump, you're back, right? Then, you know, story's over, right? Like that. No war, nothing, right? So Prabhupada mentioned that was the greatest, means that war and the war of Kurukshetra, these are the greatest battles the universe has known. So, you know, you have to have, you know, you need something, people need something to talk about, right? So there needed to be a battle. And so then Ramachandra then came with the monkeys, you know, means his practical manager here, right? Means he uses what he can get. So all he had was a bunch of monkeys, but, you know, Hari Ball, that's what he's got. And so he came with the monkeys and their boulders, and they waged war. And then he got Sita, brought Sita. So now we see here, following Dharma, then he went, he waged war, he got his wife. But then following Dharma, he also had to test his wife. So then she was brought from the fire by Agni. And having been brought by the fire, then she, you know, proved her purity. Then they came back in all grandeur on a big swan airplane, you know, along with a whole army. So it was a pretty big plane. Right? There's millions of monkeys, but they all fit in. And then they dropped everybody at, Kishkinda. And then after that, then they came to save Bharata, who was on, you know, basically the last round around the fire before he was going to enter it. And then Ram took up the, managing the kingdom. And then at some point then, you know, some, what was he? A washerman, you said? Yeah, a washerman, a dhobi, right? So they're not considered that clever, right? Barber, it said, Chanakya says, amongst men, the barber is clever, right? He doesn't say the dhobi is clever, right? So then, he was, it means, being Vedic in one sense, and that he's very strict at his wife, because his wife spent time at another person's house. It's mentioned that a beautiful woman staying at another man's house, that is very dangerous, it can be a very dangerous situation. So then this washerman then said he wouldn't take his wife back because she spent the night at another man's house. Of course, also in the Dharma Shastra saying is that she should never do this, that everything prospers in different ways, so women prosper by being in the house, performing their duties, interacting with their family, then they become very strong, very confident. So that element is there because that's the best for the relationship, best for their development. But it also mentions that if somehow or another that women can be easily strayed, but it does happen. Should be dealt with very carefully, very strictly, but it's not that they're necessarily rejected. Only if they prove that they don't want to correct themselves, they're determined to be unfaithful, then they can be rejected. But generally, even not that, they're not rejected. They're just superseded. Only if they are very proud, very attractive, very wealthy, then there might be some serious consequences for a very unchaste, determined unchaste woman. So that's the broader context. The principle is they must be chaste. That's how they're going to prosper. That's how the whole family is going to work. The children will be happy. The husband will be happy. They'll fit nicely in the community. It'll all work. So but this man was, being very Vedic. Then, pro-Vedic. He was one of the pro-Vedic group. And so he was rejecting his wife and saying that I'm not going to accept you like Ramachandra accepted back his wife, who was staying, you stayed, whatever it is, a night or a few nights like that. She was there for months on end, so I'm not like Ramachandra. So Ramachandra, having heard this, because the kings are supposed to go and check things in the kingdom, how they're going, and so then he heard this. And so then, if the public is not accepting that Sita's pure, he is accepting that they're pure, but if they accept she's not pure, then it's a problem, right? Because then they won't take the kings seriously, because they're supposed to set the Dharma, set the example, and all those different things. So then Ramachandra then, sent Sita to the forest, like that. So then, like this. And then his sons Lav and Kush appeared. Valmiki wrote the Ramayana, which the Lav and Kush then had memorized, and then they, amazingly enough, then recited it for Lord Ramachandra. So the Ramayana that we know then is Ramayana of Valmiki as spoken by Lav and Kush to Lord Ramachandra as the audience. So it's very interesting how the Vedic literatures put these the storylines together, right? Like that. So these are elements that happened on this day. And that. So any questions?
Right now, my question is,
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. So Srila Prabhupada mentions that one must chant one's japa. Like we have one story of one devotee who was a temple president, and, you know, in India, and he was arranging for a Janmashtami program. Needed a lot of money, a lot of arrangements. So he would get up in the morning, basically get out of bed, take his bath, eat something, go out all day for collection and arrangements and all that, come back late at night and just go to sleep. But he wasn't chanting. So then he came, Prabhupada had come to visit the temple, and he came in to see Prabhupada, and Prabhupada just asked him, says, are you chanting your japa? And he said, no, because I've been so busy making the Janmashtami arrangements. And then Prabhupada said, well, if you don't chant your japa, what's the use? Like that. So then that's important. But if you have other services, then you do as best you can in japa. Right? Because means what works for you is a matter of also practice. It's not a matter of fast or slow. Prabhupada mentioned in talking about the brother of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because the devotees, when they went with him to visit him one time, they went to visit, pay a visit, and they noticed that he was chanting extremely fast. And Prabhupada said, Paramahamsas can chant 3-minute rounds. Like that. But he recommended that devotees chant 5-minute rounds. Like that. Because then it's not so slow that one might get distracted, but not too fast that you wouldn't pronounce properly. You know? Like that. So you have to find what works for you. See, self-realization means what works for you. What works for someone else, everybody's different. You know, you can't say, well, I like chapatis, so why is everybody else eating rice? Or I eat 5 chapatis, why did he eat 7? Or why is they only eating 3? No, it's what works for you. So the point is that you have normal service, you have emergency service. So normal means what you can do in your regular day-to-day life. You know, things are going as ordinary. Emergency means there's something out of the ordinary that must be attended to. So then in that case, then you may have to work your japa around that service, right? If it's ordinary, you try to work it where you have your nice time for japa, you have your service, everything's very nice and has placed in its nicely, in its boxes. But if you have emergency, then you adjust around to make it work. But in any case, the round japa should be chanted. So if you have to do some in the morning, some in the evening, or however it is that you need to break it up, then it works. Like that. But best is what works for you in chanting, that's nice. But if others can chant quicker, or if others chant slower, don't really worry about that. Worry what works for you. But the point is better you get 16 rounds done, and it's not what you'd call your perfection of chanting, than not chant them at all. Right? Because otherwise then, you know, we could say that, you know, I would rather chant one perfect mantra than whole, you know, than 16 rounds that are in. But I mean, so to avoid that kind of distractions, then it's set. You chant a fixed number of rounds, and it should be as ideal as you can. Like that, you know? Is that okay? Okay, anything else? Or yes. We are in parampara. Why does Madhvacharya have his own philosophy? No, parampara means it's come down from, at Krishna's, is we're coming parampara, we have the same philosophy, why does Madhva have his own? No, it's a bringing out a particular aspect of the philosophy. Achinta Beda Veda Tattva is the complete understanding of Vedanta, you know, in its broadest form. And Dwait, Vishishta Dwait, Vishuddha Dwait, and Dwait Advait, these are different perspectives on Achinta Beda Veda Tattva. So they're all bona fide, but it's just a matter of they will take you to different places, right? It means Advait will take you to Brahman, then Vishishta Dwait, Vishuddha Dwait, Dwait, and Dwait Advait will take, Vishishta Dwait, Vishuddha Dwait, and Dwait will take you to Vaikuntha. Dwait Advait will take you to Goloka. And Achinta Beda Beda Tattva will take you into Braja Vrindavan. So it's just a matter of all these realms are there, they're all bona fide, it's just a matter of the preacher, what he was preaching. Right? Is that okay? Like that. Last point, yeah. Ours is closer to the Vishnu Swamis. Why Vishnu Swamis? Dwait Advait, but the point is Dwait Advait. It's one, it's two, but then we also have the aspect of Vishuddha Dwait, Vishishta Dwait, specialized oneness and pure oneness. Ours includes everything. Just like we have no problem discussing about the universal form and Vaishnava Brahman realization. Right? Seeing Krishna, that the potency of Krishna is in that pillar, that's why it holds the roof up. We don't have any problem with that. But that's Brahman realization. But personal Brahman realization. Right? Second canto, that's basically what it's discussing. You know what I'm saying? The conclusions of all of them are in ours. You know what I'm saying? The Madhvas, the followers of Madhva don't accept Lord Chaitanya. That's because they become tattvavadis. They're not technically understanding the full scope of Madhva's philosophy. It happens. Just like the Ramanujas, they split into two groups, the Wadagalai, Tengalai, and each one thinks the other one is wrong. You know, just like one branch of Christians thinks another one's going to hell. So it's a common thing of the conditioned souls to make those mistakes. Like that. Is it okay? Okay, so we'll end here since the clock says it is time. And we'll continue if anyone wants with questions after a few minutes. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivarinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi Hadidlo. Vagisha is there? Vagisha? He's in Gurukul. Okay. He didn't come. Oh, can you give this to him? Or you keep it nicely or give it to him? Tell him that this is all the stuff that I had asked him to get. Jagannath Mishra put together, yeah. These stuff from the Vedanta Sutra, all the Sandarbha stuff and everything from the Bhagavatam course. So keep it. So when my computer comes, then it should be pure on the computer.
Now for us, what's important, chant or do service?
Both are important. When it's time for chanting, you chant. When it's time for service, you do service.
Sometimes you like have to finish 16 rounds.
So you do them at a time when you have some time,
yes.
Or you talk to Preeti Moshai and discuss it. Yeah, and unless he's here right now, I can talk to him right now. Come over. Just ask him to come over in a second.
you told about that elephant bath.
Huh?
Elephant bathing. What a devotee should do when that conditioning come again and again.
Then try to avoid it. I just was asking, because rumor has it that you installed some deities according to Pancharatri.
Right.
They use our petition of deity and installed some deities. So, is that true or no? But how would you do that? That's like getting a girl pregnant and not married. Your thread ends with data. You don't have any rights in Pancharatri. So, know what the deities are installed. My punchline is right. Means you've done some special service and all that, and whatever it is in your home worship of that kind of devious thing. So why do you think that you can do stuff that, that only a second initiated person can do? Yeah, but practice, you can sit there and chant mantras, but you can't think that by practicing it's still the deity. But the boy thinks I just want to practice and never grow pregnant. He doesn't have the knowledge. Be very careful. Rindy and Ami and all that, but did you notice that they didn't bathe at Jamasmi and Ramasmi? Even though they would try to come up before and bathe? Because I discussed it with Jamasmi, so they don't have to bathe. Upanayan is, means that you have brahminical tendencies. It doesn't mean that you're spiritual. Pancharatra means that you're committed to spiritual life. You know what I'm saying? So, for kids, you can do it that way because they live in a separate environment, another degree of it. So they'll develop those brahminical qualities. So they get upanayana first. Then later they get actual spiritual initiation. While with the adults, they come in, then they don't have the things. They're coming to Krishna consciousness because of the spiritual determination. The kids are just born in it, right? So because of the spiritual determination, and then they're born. So therefore the spiritual comes first. So because of the Pancharatrika initiation, they'll chant seriously. Because of that, then they become qualified to take Pancharatrika initiation. And taking the Pancharatrika initiation, then they get the Brahma Gayatri also. This is thrown in as a package deal. Only because Bhaktisiddhanta says when Thakur wanted to prove that devotees, Vaishnavas, are Brahmas. And otherwise traditionally they didn't give the Upanayana because some of them didn't already get it. It's not that important, can I say? So be very clear that this has nothing to do with what the adults have in second like that. You know, so don't try to, you know, see the beauties here, don't think you can do all the time. You know, I'm saying you have a limit to what you can do. That's why you see we go in the way like the lamps, clean the floor, walk out. Like that, chant mantras, we can do that. We can do other things like that. You have to be very, very careful because I wouldn't do that outside of here. Otherwise, devotees have a very little discrimination. Devotees don't know they have Bhagavat, Pancharat, and Vedic initiation. They don't know that. They understand there's initiation, they don't understand. So be very, very careful. You chant it, you know, like that. You practice, up to you. It's a bona fide thing. You know, it's there to help you understand your mind and body. Yeah, so be careful. Okay? Yeah. Honesty
the thing is most people can't handle honesty or truth because of their condition. Does that make sense? So therefore, when you have to be careful who you reveal your mind to and how much. Because there's, because there's a political element behind it. It's not that, you know, it's like you may be trusting, and that's good. Don't lose that, but know that most people aren't. Therefore, you have to be careful what is spoken. Because otherwise, then they put their own conditioning on it and don't see through the eyes of Scripture. And because of that, then they make their own political things and try to make so much trouble because it's important to them. And especially you'll find, though we don't talk about it much, the ones that generally make the most trouble are ones that have their own skeletons in the closet that they're trying to either cover or make themselves feel good about denying or for. Most people would go on crusades about some political or social issue are ones that they themselves are guilty of a similar kind of thing. And for their own reformation, then they're doing the opposite to it. You know what I'm saying? You know, like someone was a criminal before, now he works for the government and catches other criminals. That kind of thing. Like that. So it's very fun. So be careful when you say what to, like this. They won't understand. Most people can't understand the concept nowadays that government takes enough, so they give up family rights and reduce material desires. Someone would, focus more on devotional service. It's not a popular viewpoint of these things. You know? So therefore, anything that might sound like that, they will take it, oh, you know, you weren't into it, you know, you had some other idea, you were never chased, you're a lesbian, anything can come up. I've seen ladies being called lesbians because they weren't so enthusiastic about, you know, intimacy with their husband because it wasn't balanced. You know what I'm saying? Like that. I've seen that. They've been discredited in the whole zone just to, so the husband could get divorced and marry someone else. You know, like that. So one has to be very, very careful politically in this subject. Like that doesn't mean that it reduces your honesty or this or that. It just reduces what you can say about situations. And just to know that the arena of honesty and truth is very narrow. There's very few people who can say be truthful with and they will they'll be comfortable with it and be able to see it in the right perspective. It's a good thing to know because you have to protect yourself. So husband's not there to protect, you have to be able to protect yourself. So you don't want to create any waves that are, it doesn't mean you proper standards, it just means you don't say things that others might take wrong because of their own attachments. Of course not. But the devotees don't look like that. But at the same time, they can be separate. So it just means who's protecting and all that. It's a matter of who's protecting. If you want, we can discuss more after. Okay? This and that after.
Some questions? Anything? Yes? No? She has a question. Okay? Okay, how could Rama, women are to be protected, so how could Ramachandra send his wife away? You know, so she would be unprotected. He took her to Valmiki's ashram. So Valmiki was a great devotee of Ramachandra, and so therefore he would take care of Sita very nicely. So she was still protected, she just wasn't protected under her husband, right? The point is a woman should be protected. So under the father, under the husband, or under the son, right? So then father can mean any category. So here he's like guru, he's a saint, he's a sage. So then he will take care of her like a father, right? Then she was pregnant, so she'll have sons, the sons will grow up, they'll take care of her. Right? Does that make sense? So it was all arranged nicely. She was taken care of. Just that he couldn't keep her in the kingdom because the common people, being common, don't have the discrimination. That's why in the Vedic culture, certain things are very cut and dry. And that's the normal thing that most people catch as important, is the real cut and dry rules. But the element of, how you say? Applying those cut and dry rules to the time, place, and circumstance in each individual, that then takes a lot of discretion. Therefore, only the Brahmins and kings would do that. You know? Does that make sense? And if a king didn't know what to do, then he would take advice from the Brahmins. Right? And if a Brahmin didn't know what to do, then a group of qualified Brahmins. Right? Like that. And that way, then, the law would be ascertained. Because the general rule, it applies, but how it will be applied, that may differ. You know, what is protection? So here it would be, okay, she's protected by the husband. But the husband had to make arrangement for the protection of the kingdom that she was then protected under Valmiki. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. To pray to Krishna to get back material things that are lost. Better him than someone else. Right? Means, in other words, the best is to approach Krishna for love. But in any case, if it's something important, then you should explain why it's important and how it's going to be useful in your service or the situation you're in. But at the same time, it's not that it doesn't need to be removed still. Does that make sense? If you have a material attachment, all material attachments have to go at some point or another if you want to go back to Godhead. So then it's just a matter of when. You know what I'm saying? So one has to be open to the idea that these things will go, but at the same time in such a way that it works. Right? So if it's too quick, then it may cause disturbance, so you slow it down. But it doesn't mean that the idea that it will be there forever. No, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like you get a disease. It's supposed to be there for a certain amount of time. If you take medicine and get rid of the disease, then you simply put it off for now. It will come back again later. You know, for how much is remaining. And then if you take again, then how much, you know, because generally you get so sick and it runs a few days before you start taking medicine that really gets rid of it, right? So a few days have gone. So then those days are already done, but balance is still there. You know what I'm saying? But it's just that you prolong it. But the point is this material attachment has to go. Best is by becoming attached to Krishna, one loses one's interest in what's in the material world. Does that make sense? Right? So that's why you cultivate both the attachment to Krishna and those things that develop that attachment, and at the same time those things that, get rid of attachment. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you try to develop the spiritual attachment and try to avoid those things that generate or increase material attachment. Does that make sense? Yeah? But if you're going to pray for something back, you should pray why you want it. You know? So it's clear in your mind. Just because you want it, okay, that's nice. But why do you want it? you know, then yourself you'll see how important it is also. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Yeah. Does that answer the question? Okay. Have something on that? One takes what? Yeah. Okay, what's it, it means fire, debt, and disease should be taken care of immediately. So then, otherwise they get worse. So then, but at the same time we're discussing karma is burnt off by if the disease is let to run. But the point is that we're getting rid of disease because we're doing service. So more important is service, because service will take you back to Godhead. Getting rid of disease was simply just get rid of any impiety that's there. It doesn't even generate piety. You know what I'm saying? If so, by following the Shastra, by following, you know, the scriptures on the direction for disease, then that will generate piety. Right? It may not be getting rid of the impiety, but it will generate piety. And by getting rid of the disease, then you can render service. So that's spiritual. So you're getting spiritual benefit, you're getting material benefit. You know, you may not be getting rid of material, you know, unbenefit, you know. Does that make sense? But it's recommended when one is mature, you know, at one stage in one's life, one doesn't bother so much with medicine and that anymore. And just lets things burn off. But that's what one is focused, mature, and able to, you know, one doesn't care anymore. You know what I'm saying? It means one would not be able to physically do all those services anyway. Now, main thing is hearing, chanting, remembering. So you can do that whether you're sick or you're healthy, you know? But to do physical services, you have to be physically healthy, you know? But at the same time, as we see is that in Bhagavatam, it mentions the only thing a saintly person might ask for that's material is health, good health. Because in good health, then you can perform your sadhana. I was just giving as an example of that karma doesn't just go away, right? You can burn it up through devotional service, so that's another way of doing it. It's like, you know, it's like, you better be, you know, if you're very serious about devotional service, you can burn up the reactions before they, you know, get you later that would be there in material. Does that make sense? So it's another way of taking care. So that was just given as an example. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay. Something else? Nothing else? No? Does that mean all questions are answered, or everyone is bored, or no one can handle any more of these technical answers, or, you know? It's Dasami and tomorrow's Ekadasi, and you want to get in as much as you can to eat today, or... But, yeah. Say again, means... I didn't quite hear. Means we have these things called fans, and they're great at making it so you can't hear. Thank you. If a devotee has a disease that won't go away, but they're chanting Hare Krishna, unlimited, so you know it's a pretty bad sin that got you your disease. There's in Ayurveda, it mentions that there are diseases that are called karma vyadis. It means everything's coming by some karma, but they're, you know, it'll be mild. But karma vyadi diseases are ones that you don't even bother treating. If the person is so, how you say, materially attached that they can't understand this, then you can give them medicine. But nobody should think it will do anything. You understand? In other words, it's so heavy that you've gone through all the treatments and everything, but it just doesn't go away or get any better. Then you just know it's very, very heavy karma, and it's not going to go until the karma's been reduced. So there's chapters of that in the Ayurveda, just describing this principle. You know, karma vyadis, who you can't save. You know, there's certain symptoms that if they're there, you can go and give the medicine, but the person will die anyway. And not only that, the best part about it is you as the doctor will be blamed. Therefore, they give two chapters just on what things not even to get involved in. You know, if you see these symptoms, either the person is dead before you get there, or you'll give medicine and treatment, and they'll die, and the family will blame you. So don't even get involved in these ones. You know what I'm saying? Practical. So karma vyadi then is a reality. That's why a lot of times you see devotee goes to this doctor, that doctor, a million doctors, nothing ever happens. And then he goes to one doctor and then he cures him. So that's the real doctor. No, it was that he's had the disease so long, it's burnt off enough, now you can actually treat it. Right? Because the one guy that somebody went to and didn't find that they got any result from, that's the one that now has the miracle cure. And one of the ones that the other person found didn't do anything, then that's who the second person finds as he's the great doctor. You understand? So that's the point, is that, you know, you make the endeavor to get rid of it, because through endeavor only only through action is there maintenance. Only through action is there relationships. You know what I'm saying? So through these actions, then that's the whole point. The Vedic system is based on action. Right? Result is there, but result is the inspiration for action. So in the Vedic culture, actually action is more important than result. Modern culture, results are most important. That's why they'll do anything to get the result. And in the meantime, then they break down all the relationships that they want the result for. But relationships not tasted in result, it's tasted in action. You know what I'm saying? That's the point. Results simply become part of the field, which you can, therefore, a bigger field means more activities. Does that make sense? I have nothing, so I make an endeavor to get a house. Right? So my goal, or the result, is my house. Having gotten the house, it's not a goal anymore. Now it becomes part of the sambandha. Right? Now it becomes the field of action. Now I can now interact with the family instead of, you know, on the street under a plastic sheet, now in a house. Right? So it becomes simply the field of action, but it's the interaction that's important. Right? Then now I have a house, but there's nothing in the house, right? So therefore, I endeavor to get furnitures and utensils and, you know, other things that will make the house comfortable and nice and useful. So having endeavored and gotten those, then that moment you've gotten them, one is happy, but one's technically happy because now you have a greater field in which you can interact. You understand? So it always comes back to action. But modern culture thinks if I got the result, then it's done. I got the house. Now, the rest of my life, I don't have to do anything for the family. I got them money. I got them a house. I got them food. I got a car. I'm done. I'm the best husband and father in the world. But that's only you've created the situation in which you could be the best father, but unless you do something, you're not. Right? And I'm talking about the nice guys that feel dutiful, and they make such a bad mistake. At least they got the stuff. Then there's the ones that don't even bother to get the stuff. You know, so how bad is their existence? Right? So that's the focus in the Vedic culture is on action. So even if there's no going to be no result from your taking the medicine, at least you're making the endeavor, because you're trying to maintain your health so you can properly perform your duties. Does that make sense? But at the same time, as you're not attached to the result. If you get better, great. If you don't get better, hey, that's life. Right? Does that make sense? So endeavor is the... If we were in Africa, you never know what was said. Right? You know? Because there's a language I can't say. Close, something like that. They use clicks in the language, so that might have been a lot of... Yes. Does that make sense? Is that clear? So action is the most important thing. That's why inaction is not good. That's why Krishna didn't appreciate Arjuna's solution. Because it wasn't that he was going to now be active as a sadhu in the forest, because he's a kshatriya. He would have gone to the forest and immediately started taking up protecting the sages and shooting all the wild animals and dealing with all the politics that goes on in the village. He would have just been a kshatriya. So his thing is, I'll give up everything, go to the forest, do nothing. That was his solution. Krishna says, no, that's in the mode of ignorance. Right? That's why he called him a fool. He didn't say, you're a very intelligent man, but a little misdirected or a little not informed. He said, you're a fool. Fools means ignorance. Because it was inaction. Right? It wasn't spiritual inaction, means you're involved but not attached. Here he was attached and doing nothing. So that's the worst. Someone who's attached and does nothing, bad news. No one likes them. Right? Does that make sense? And just to let you on a secret, especially women. Right? Like that. Is that okay? Like that. So that's why the Vedas are always talking about one should be engaged in one's duties. Right? Krishna says you have a right to do your duty. No one can stop you from doing your duty. Like that. But you're not supposed to be attached to the results. And don't think that the results have come because you did your duties. No, they came because of... That's the process. Krishna's arranging. He is the process. He is the result. He is the endeavor. He is the ability to perform the activity. So it's come because of him. Right? And don't get attached to not doing your duty. You know, the situation's there that you can't do, don't get attached to not doing it. You may not be able to perform the duty, but don't get attached to that. As soon as you can, you should immediately be doing your duties again. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why he says action is better than inaction. Right? Does that make sense? Right.
So therefore it's better to, is it better to just focus spiritually on your service and on your sadhana, and obviously take intelligent measures if something gets, you know, some intelligence is used, but not like I never took this into account. Sometimes they can be that your whole life becomes dealing with illness, and it's come of yet it's like fruitless.
Yes. You understand? Yeah, that's it. Because the endeavor, as we mentioned, Chanakya says anything overdone will cause a problem. Like that. So if you over-endeavor, you know, your whole life becomes trying to make yourself healthy, then what's the use? You're not doing anything anyway. So better you make the appropriate, endeavor and then figure out how to keep yourself engaged in service. So if you can't do the services you do before, do a service you can do. Like that. But keep yourself busy.
And I'm asking because I saw one of my major doctors that came here at Gokulima. His mood was very strange. can do anything, he wouldn't even be able to watch out of me from doing that at all. And so I'm sort of guessing that this must be a kind of learning that I'm sort of going through. But is there a way of checking? I think it's like.
Check with someone else who will tell you what it is that they see in the chart.
Yeah, I mean, Federation knows what I'm going to, but I could just say, asking you at the end of the time of the idea, then you can say yes or no.
Yeah, like that.
But, so then sort of to ask them the story that they can tell from the chart.
Generally. Depends if they're trained in that area.
Yeah. And then if they are, then they'll know whether it's something that will leave when we leave your body or when we...
Whatever. What's the point? No, but the point is, what is the point of the personal advice? The point is, keep yourself busy. It's going to go away when it's going to go away. If it makes you feel better, you kind of know, you know, at what date and what time and, you know, and what minute. That's another thing. But I've seen diseases that one day suddenly come out of nowhere, and then after so many years, and you know, no matter how much medicine, it doesn't go away, and then one day, bang, just go away. I've seen it happen like that. So it's just, you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? No, it will go away. You just engage in your service and take the precautions. If it's important to you, know to know exact time and you know everything like that, then ask somebody who knows that particular aspect. Lord knows everything. So, Lord knows that you want to cook lunch. So does that mean you don't cook lunch now? Yeah, so the point is the Lord knows, but it's your business to make Him know. The Lord knows everything, but then where does rasa come into it? You know what I'm saying? The point is we make endeavor. Activity. So what is the idea? Oh, the Lord knows everything. So then why do anything? You know what I'm saying? Like that. We're not Christians, but maybe it's the other way around. Maybe Christians got praying from us. Right? I think bandhanam is not a Latin word. I think it's Sanskrit. You know, prarthana, you know, lalasamayi, what do you call it, vigyapti, danya bodhika. None of these are Latin words. Latin might have some roots back into the Sanskrit that have the meaning, but religion comes from God. You know what I'm saying? So we're not Christians, but since when is praying make you a Christian? So that means in the morning we sing these songs, we sing these bhajans, we offer our obeisances, we pray before the deity, so therefore we're all Christians, or what? Does that make sense? So it's not a very good argument. Like that. Guaranteed that same person you say, why don't we pray for this other person, if their child was sick, I think they would become very seriously Christian. Right? According to their definition. So the point is that praying for others is a normal thing. What do you think well-wishing means? Right? The spiritual master prays for the benefit of the disciples. That's why they advance. You know what I'm saying? The wife is praying for the husband, for the children. That's why they're maintained, they're safe. Right? Men are protected by chaste women. Does that make sense? So where does this idea that hoping for, you know, the well-wishing for someone else is not important? Where does it come from? It comes from the mentality that no one's ever cared for me, so why should I care for anybody else? That's where it's come from. Therefore, be careful who you asked. Ask, that's all. Right? What did I say?
What can be the best prayer for someone?
That they understand and, you know, come back to, you know, reawaken their, you know, attraction and attachment to Krishna, and their understanding, you know, of, you know, that the material energy is not the greatest shelter. That make sense? Yeah. Okay.
You just said that men are protected by chaste women, and so we have to conclude that if a man is not protected against Maya, then his wife is not chaste.
No, it's not protected against Maya. It's protected against, you know, being run over by a Mack truck and stuff like that. It's. But it's not that they don't have their karma. You know, if they're supposed to be run over by a truck, then they'll be run over by a truck. But it does a lot. When someone is your well-wisher, it does a lot for one's benefit and upliftment. Like that. One shouldn't underestimate the potency of it. You know, but how much is there compared to what's otherwise? We see examples, you know, very powerful examples of the, I can't remember her name. But, I mean, if there's examples of the wives, because of their chastity, bringing their husbands back to life. You know, I mean, one stopped the sun. The sun couldn't move. He couldn't rise in the morning because her husband was cursed that he would die at sunrise. So then she made the determination that the sun's not rising. And the sun god couldn't get into his chariot. You know, it's like frozen in place. He couldn't get into his chariot. So it had to go up to Lord Brahma. Brahma had to come down and talk to the lady. And he says, if the sun doesn't rise, the whole universe will perish, because they all depend, life depends upon the sun. She says, well, you're Lord Brahma, that's your problem. My problem's my husband. So I'm doing my duty, now, you know, you take care of yours, you know. Like that, you know. So then, Brahma understood that, one, she's very fixed, otherwise how is it that the sun couldn't move? So he couldn't just, you know, use some, you know, just nice sentimental logic here, or, you know, the whole universe will die, or, you know, so what? That's, you're the father of the universe, it's your business to take care of them. I'm the wife of my husband, I'm supposed to take care of him. So, you know, everybody should stick to their own duties, let's make it clear here, you know. So then he said, okay, I'll make you a deal. You let the sun rise, he'll die, I'll bring him back to life. And not only that, we'll throw in a bonus. He won't be a invalid leper anymore. He'll be a nice, you know, beautiful, handsome man. So she wasn't worried that for herself that he would look good and nice. She was thinking for him that would be nicer to be healthy and handsome than to be a leper and sickly and all that. So she agreed. So then the sun came up, he died, and then Brahma brought him back to life. So, you know, it shouldn't be underestimated, the power of it. Like that, you know. So these are special examples. So it's not necessarily that it's going to be otherwise. But does that make sense? So spiritually, that we're well wishing. But the point is spiritual. It's everybody's choice. Right? Everybody has their choice. They want to be involved in Krishna consciousness, or they don't, or to what degree. Everybody has their choice. So we do the best to try to help or influence or support a good choice, but the choice still has to be made by the individual. You know? So therefore, it's not anyone's fault that they give up Krishna consciousness. Right? It's like this, you can say, oh, they've been through so much. Therefore they left. It may have an influence, but look at the Pandavas. They went from having nothing. They went from being situated very well in a great dynasty that was all because of their father to having nothing and having then to hide, right? And then coming back, getting half the kingdom, which is the part that nothing lives there. There was a curse on it that everything, nothing lived there. Not even a bird or a bug. And taking that and making it more opulent than Indra's place. Right? In fact, Indra himself built the city. Then conquering the world and being undisputed. Not meaning that others grudgingly, because your army is bigger, therefore they accepted your sovereignty. This is willingly. And having more wealth than anybody could imagine. And then losing it all in one day and being sent back to the forest. Right? And in all that, the Krishna conscious, there was not a blip in it. Nothing. It stayed perfectly exactly the same. They're in the forest, they're on the throne, they're in the forest, doesn't matter. So ultimately, it is the choice of the individual. Right? It doesn't mean that Duryodhana doesn't get some bad reactions for his improper behavior. You know, that's there. But you can't say that someone gave up Krishna consciousness because of the material situation. You know what I'm saying? Like that. There's people whose family members die, they become more serious in Krishna consciousness. Others' family members die, they reject Krishna. You know, I mean, what's his name? The Lord of Transylvania? Dracula, yeah. I think his name was Vlad. He was a very religious man, extremely religious. And he went off on a campaign once, came back after some years, and I think his wife had died. Because he was always, you know, very strictly, you know, religious. Then his point was, well, you know, what's God doing? I did all this praying and nothing happened. So then he became an atheist. Like that. So it's not necessarily a glorious position, you know, unless you're making horror movies or something, you know. Does that make sense? Glorious. And it's not glorious that things materially went bad and you gave up Krishna consciousness because of the material situation. That's not glorious. I'm saying, in the case of Dracula, they've made a few movies, somebody's made some money, you know, some people have had a good time, but other than that, as far as Krishna consciousness, there's no benefit. So, therefore, one can appreciate the difficulties one went through, therefore maybe they left Krishna consciousness, but that was their own choice. But still, just because they made that choice doesn't mean that we don't hope for their best and that they will, you know, reassess and therefore take up Krishna consciousness again. Right? But those that have made the situation bad for them, then you have to consider that, you know, they could have done better. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Yeah. Anything else? Yeah, because that's one of the elements of the mode of goodness, is staying away means one's worried that by performing activity, passion will turn into ignorance. That passion can also turn into goodness. Kapila Muni mentions that devotional service mixed with the mode of goodness means that you don't want to engage in any activity that will create any difficulty. His mode of goodness is everything should be nice. I don't want anything to not be nice. Therefore, I will avoid anything that will make it not nice. Right? Passion, see, there's the consciousness of passion, and then there's the activity. You know what I'm saying? Activities are under the particular modes they're under. It doesn't matter what you're doing with it. You know? You know what I'm saying? Your chopping up potatoes to cook for Krishna, or you're chopping up the potatoes to cook for Maya. The potato being cut, you're destroying the particular form of the potato that's already there, so ignorance is at play. Same time as you're creating something new, so that means passion's at play. So it's the consciousness that makes the point. The modes of nature are going to make it work the way the modes of nature make it work. That's, you know, you want to drive to the temple, you want to drive to the casino. The car works in the same way. You know what I'm saying? So that shouldn't be the element. Passion means you have desire that you want the result. You think you're the doer and you want the result. Goodness means I'm doing this because I'm supposed to and the result's not mine. Does that make sense? Like, but the normal thing is ignorance, passion, goodness. You're in ignorance, but because then you desire something, you'll act. And then from acting according to the rules and regulations, you get purified, you situate yourself in goodness. Right? The boy's lazy. He's happy to sit at home, do nothing, let his mother do everything. But then he gets attracted to a girl. Right? So he's in the mode of ignorance, useless. He gets attracted to a girl, then he gets married. As a married man, the wife's not like the husband that takes care of everything. I mean, the wife's not like the mother. Mother takes care of anything, whether you're, you know, a lazy bum or not. They may not like it, but they'll still do it because that's their need in their life. But the wife has a different need. So therefore, you got to, you know, do things. So therefore, they kick them out of the mode of forcibly out of the mode of ignorance into the mode of passion. Then to please his wife, so therefore he's happy, he works. But if he does that according to Shastra, then he'll be purified by those actions and passion. And because he's followed the Shastra in that, out of duty, then he'll be purified and be situated in the mode of goodness. Then he'll understand, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is how a husband is supposed to take care of the family. You know, like that. Then he situates himself in goodness. So action is not the cause of passion. Right? Action is there. You know, that's that is, I mean, chit, potency is knowledge and activity. That reflects in this world as the mode of passion. Right? That's why you see sometimes passionate people can be very studious and learn things and be very intelligent. Because knowledge and action go together. And generally you see the most successful people are those that have knowledge and action. Someone who just has knowledge or just has action, they're not that successful. The one who has both, they're the top people, both materially and spiritually. Does that make sense?
Take for example, like a man in the middle of the week that was being kicked into action.
Yeah, bias means if one doesn't have the inspiration of a woman to make you do something, right? Then it's a matter of the performance of prescribed duties, because that's austerity, to perform your prescribed duties. By proper performance of that, then one will advance, one will be purified. And sacrifice that you're doing things for others, like that. Because that's the point. The wife makes you do something for others, like that. So therefore, they're not there, then you have to be more willing to do something for others, right? That's why someone who has a sense of austerity and sacrifice like that, if that's the greater element than attachment, then there's no need of getting married, right? But if that sense of attachment is more, they have to practice sacrifice, austerity, and charity. But it's that attachment will drive them to do it, and that way they get purified. But if they don't have so much, then they should be performing those activities, those three activities, anyway. And those will purify one and move one on. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the sense of duty is what motivates you, as opposed to the sense of, I'm going to get something, or if I don't do this, I'm going to be in trouble. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Something else, or? Anything else? Oh, okay. Question was, if you pray for someone to come back to Krishna consciousness and they come back, could you in some way be displeasing Krishna because he only came back because you prayed for it, not that Krishna wanted it? Right? The point is Krishna wants everybody to come be in Krishna consciousness because that's the natural position of the living entity. Krishna makes arrangement for the living entities to forget him because they want to. But he's coming himself, he's sending in the acharyas, the scriptures are there, the devotional process is there, all these different things, the whole Vedic culture is there, so that living entities may make advancement and go progress back to Godhead. Right? So Krishna wants them to go back to Godhead. Like that. But you should know it that, yeah. Does that make sense? Don't be disturbed if, having prayed for them to come back to Krishna consciousness, they do, but it still doesn't enhance your relationship. Right? Don't be disturbed about that. Know that the best position for anybody is Krishna consciousness, so if you can help in that, then great. And if you had a relationship with that person before and that is reinstated, very nice. But if it's not, and they're Krishna conscious and not reinstated, still we can go back to Godhead. You know what I'm saying? We're not dependent upon any particular persons. We're dependent upon, you know, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Like that. We're depending on Guru and Krishna, you know, and the Vaishnava, like this. So, and that way, that's where we develop spiritually. Does that make sense? You can, but like I said, explain everything. You know what I'm saying? Why ask for something in ignorance? You want to reestablish a relationship, but then why should it be reestablished? What for? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. It means, in other words, you should know why. And if you know why, you can explain it to Krishna. Right? You know, a kid says, I want some food. The parents are going to say, if it's not food, if it's not mealtime, they say, why? You know, because it could be anything. Oh, I want some because I want to throw it on the walls, or I want to throw it at the cars that are going by, or I want to, you know, smear it on top of my sister's head, or, you know, anything. You know, I want to put it in my father's shoes, or, you know, it could be so many things. If they say, I'm hungry, then, okay, then you get some food. You know what I'm saying? But it, you know, if you can explain it, then it makes, you know, you explain to your mother that I want food so I can stick it in my, you know, brother's shoes so that, you know, I watch the look on his face when he puts his feet in his shoes and it's full of mashed potato. You know, like that. So there, well, you've done that. No, okay. Irish, you gotta watch out, you know. Potatoes. No, actually, they're too respectful to potatoes. They'd never do that, right? So, yes, you know, it's like that. So then, does that make sense? So, therefore, then in your own mind, you're clear exactly why it should be there. Does that make sense? Is that okay? If you're not getting something you need. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Would it be helpful to refer to astrology if you're not getting certain material needs that you feel are important because of obstacles? You can, but the point is having referred to astrology, you still have to make an endeavor. You know what I'm saying? Point is if you feel you need something and you endeavor for it, don't get it, first look at, actually, is it important? Maybe it's not. If after analyzing it you still feel it's important, then make a plan how to endeavor for it. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the plan that you've been following doesn't work. Try something else. Right? And the more you can base it on Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then the more comfortable you'll feel performing that endeavor. Because if nothing else, even if it doesn't get the result, at least you'll have purified yourself by appropriate endeavor. Right? So at least some benefit is gotten. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. So, would astrology help? See, the point is it will only help if it results in endeavor. Right? If it doesn't result in endeavor, then what's the use? Oh, I'm not going to get it, so I don't endeavor. But if it's your duty to make that endeavor, then you should be doing it. Right? Or it's, oh, I'm not going to get it, so therefore then I go into a depression. No, the point is if I'm not going to get it, I should become detached from it. So that's my endeavor. Right? So I'm either performing the activities that will get it, or giving up the idea to get it. You know what I'm saying? But laziness, oh, it's going to come, so I make no endeavor. Or, oh, I'm not going to get it, therefore I'll do nothing out of, you know, feeling bad. Either of those are both ignorance. Right? Action has to be there. So either it's action, you know, it's like in Bhagavad Gita, action in karma yoga, action in Krishna consciousness. So either we're endeavoring to get the thing, or we're making the endeavor to become detached from the thing. But in either case, there's movement. You know what I'm saying? What am I saying? And hopefully the movement's forward, right? Yeah? Yes, I mean? Okay, so do we need to present formal prayers, or just is the endeavor in Krishna consciousness enough? Depends on the individual. There's 9 processes. So some like the formal, some like informal, they'll just pray or, you know, wherever they are, discuss wherever they are. And some will just absorb themselves in the service. So it doesn't matter. Any combination or any one of them. Means you can become perfect by any one of the 9 or any combination. So it doesn't matter. It's very individual. But if you're going to formally do it, then it's mentioned that one should, you know, make those formal prayers of standing on the right of the deity, offer obeisances always properly. You know, one should, the elements of the formal devotional activity should always be there. It mentions in 7th canto, in the Shravana Kirtana verse of Prahlad Maharaj, it mentioned, I think there's 6 points, that if you want to perfect yourself by prayer, then these 6 points must be there. But otherwise, if you're just using prayer, then they're not as important. Is that okay? With that. Anything else? Or? No? Okay, so we'll end here. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.